swung and lined to deep left field. It is gone!
Hit well. Deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
Welcome back to Disgusting Baseball. This is episode 209. I'm your host, Matt Lyons, and in this week's episode, the sky is on fire, everything is burning, and Austin Comber is going to drag us to baseball hell, but at least Logan Allen looked nice for a day. Josh Bell might be all right for a little bit. We're going to look around the AL Central just for something else to talk about besides what we just witnessed on the field for the Cleveland Guardians. Joining me for all that morning, I'm Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
They call me Mr. Big Enthusiasm because I have space hogs in the meantime stuck in my head.
Anything to stop thinking about the game that is on currently. We record on Mondays, and there's usually not, it's just kind of when we're both available. But a byproduct of Monday is there's usually either an off day or there's a game while we're recording, so we don't usually pay attention to it. But on one unfortunate Monday, late April, the Guardians decided to play an early start on Monday, and it's maybe the worst game. I think I've said that's the worst game I've seen this year multiple times. Maybe this one isn't worse than the doubleheader just against
any
the Marlins.
Any of the doubleheaders.
Honestly, any of the Tiger games.
All the doubleheader games.
Yeah. Even all the Tigers ones, the one they won was not fun either. Because this is why I don't like recording after games. All I want to talk about is how bad the game was. Because before that, this was going to be a relatively fun and upbeat podcast.
Because, yeah, we're feeling vibe. The vibes are strong, you know? We have space hogs in the meantime stuck in
our I believe we wrote the sentence, the offense is back, as part of the
we sure did,
the
buddy.
Rundown. And then they are not back. It turns out they could just hit one pitcher against the Marlins, and they're back in the toilet.
Left.
Except
they were back. They got out of here again.
They're that Simpsons gift where he walks in, gets the hat, puts it back on, and leaves.
Exactly, yeah.
It's a weird time of the year. I mean, you're not allowed to be upset because it's early, remember? That's against the law to care about the baseball team in April.
And, you know,
because
I was thinking about this. I just feel like early in the season also, it's just harder to beat the bad teams because, like, they're still trying because everyone thinks they're still in it. You know what I mean?
That's
like,
a good point,
obviously,
yeah.
In the long run, everyone knows who's going to be good and who's going to be bad. But, like, the bad, you know, well, once things start shaking out and order is restored come, you know, late May, early June, your Royals of the world will just start falling into a toilet, and you know it'll all clear up a bit. But
I think that's definitely true for like right now the Pirates, who are leading the NL Central and are the best team in baseball.
Example, yes.
But an unfortunate counterpoint is that the Rockies are 6-17, and the A's, who did I think the Guardians won one game, and they're off to the worst run differential in history through like 20 games.
I really don't need you piercing my brilliant ideas here. Come on.
Listen, I think in general you're right. It's just the Guardians have not been good against these teams. I don't think the Pirates are going to be great forever. They just have.
No. I don't think the Orioles are going to be a 667 win team this year, or right, is that 614-7? What is that winning percentage? Right? Yeah, okay.
I thought you were looking at the standings. If you just did it in your head, that was impressive, man.
So yeah, the Padres are a 500 team. The Cardinals are losing. Like the Orioles, you know, the Yankees are probably yeah, I don't know, they may not win the division, but they're definitely not going to come in third. I don't think the Orioles are that good yet. I'm not going to sit here and say I really believe in, let's scroll down to their pitching staff, Kyle Gibson and Tyler Wells and Dean Kremer. These aren't real human beings. The only one who are real are Kyle Gibson and Grayson Rodriguez, because I saw them both pitch in AA. So
there you go. Everyone else is
a decade apart, oddly enough. Isn't that funny? Oh, that's interesting. Oh, damn, I'm old. Wow.
Yeah, Kyle Gibson has been around a long time, right?
Yeah, I saw him pitch in AA. Like he was a young up and coming prospect for the Twins at the time. I saw him in New Britain, Connecticut, and then a decade later, I saw Grayson Rodriguez get absolutely shelled in Bowie, Maryland. So both of them look bad. There you go.
And now they're in the Orioles, so good luck.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe it'll turn around. Then again, they have a bullpen, so I don't know. Like Felix Bautista.
You know who else can turn around, Matt? Or what else?
Who's
can
that?
Turn around?
Meatball.
Meatballs, obviously, Matt. Meatballs are talking about fun little tidbits from the Guardians of last week. There are not many fun ones, but there are tidbits. I don't even have one this week, actually.
I have two. Perfect.
Had to squeeze everything else in, so I'm glad you got two. So go ahead with your first one.
The first one is the fact that in the last week, James Karinchak has given up more home runs than he struck people out.
Ooh, that's... We're starting moldy today, aren't we, with the meatballs?
This is more of a rotten meatball. The moldy ones are about old stuff. This is more of a rotten meatball. So, I actually picked this up because of, I assume he's a friend of the pod, Jeff Ellis, at Jeff MLB Draft on Twitter. Great.
I don't know if he listens, but he's friends.
Hey, he seems friendly enough. You never know. I think he has the best podcast in sports, personally. He's wonderful. Well, he pointed out a couple of interesting things about Mr. Karinchak, specifically his fastball spin rate has dropped from the 77th percentile to the 30th percentile, which is interesting to me. Also, what caught my eye, despite the fact that he's been so bad, Karinchak is still getting a strikeout, 87th percentile strikeout rate and 81st percentile chase rate. So some things are working, but maybe just inconsistently. I saw some theories knocking around our old friend Twitter that maybe it's because with the pace of play being picked up, he can't build out that precise, perfect blend of his own sweat and rosin and sunscreen that allows him to get the grip on the ball he needs to get that spin. So that could be something. But anyway, yeah, James Karinchak has been bad the last week. Probably the biggest gaping hole in the bullpen over the last week of, as you were mentioning before, some of the most miserable baseball I've seen in a year.
Quite a while. And then one of his bad outings came against in one of the good games. He almost made it bad.
Oh, man. Because
that was arguably the perfect place to put him in. It was like a 5-run lead, and he still gave up a 3-run home run. He's not good.
Really bad this year. 4 home runs given up already in what? How many? 12 innings? Like, that's not good. I mean, what one likes to think that's not sustainable. And again, we saw him bounce back okay after the original no more sticky stuff situation. So one has to assume he'll figure something out. The right blend. You know, we saw what happened with Max Scherzer the other day getting ejected and then suspended despite not doing anything illegal, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
But Jim Karinchak just looks bad. Go on, I'm sorry.
I was going to say with Max Scherzer, not to say that he wasn't telling the truth, but I think it's kind of funny that, like, he's clearly a guy that he's a super competitive athlete. It's just kind of funny to take his word immediately. There's no possible way.
Well, I'm scared of him.
He was doing anything. Cheating. Yeah. Look him in the eyes and tell him he's cheating.
He won a World Series with my adopted hometown team. So, you know what? Screw you. He's cool.
Oh, he's awesome. But the pitchers are also the reason we have this rule. I'm not going to take any of them immediately at their word. But, I don't know.
I mean, I know. But it's just funny that the only guy who's who has also caught people on this has been the same guy. I think it was Phil Cousy.
Yeah, Phil Cousy.
Yeah, it's the same umpire over and over. It's like, what the heck is rosin? What are you talking about? What is this?
And they made him wash his hands with alcohol, which makes it worse because it just evaporates the water and gets stickier. So,
oh, good. Okay.
That was just the umpires fucking everything up from start to finish, I think.
I remember Clay Buchholz got caught for this in like 2012 or something because they were just doing the classic sunscreen and rosin blend, which is, you know, pretty normal. You know, sometimes you'll see the pitcher kind of toss the rosin bag up in his hands and throw it up and kind of smack it with his forearm/elbows and kind of a fun little thing. But also it's building up a little sticky blend. So listen, you need to have a sticky ball.
You got to have sticky balls, man.
You got to have these sticky balls.
No, you got it, because even batters want it, because if you don't, it's just going to hit everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we should look in more to what they're doing in Japan. Because they have a naturally tacky, Jesus Christ, a naturally tacky ball over there. And I got to stop pointing out the weirdness because it's only making it worse. But that's an idea. But anyway, all this to say, James Karinchak has been not great this year and hideously, but the absolute worst type of reliever you can't be over the last 4 appearances this past week. My God.
Yeah, and walks too. Like, there's the 3 home runs and 2 walks to 2 strikeouts.
I don't
want to
bring that up. Yeah,
is not what you want out of here.
9 hits. But, you know, that's fine.
Yeah. What's your slightly
10 hits,
hopefully less miserable second meatball?
Oh, great. Yeah, that's also miserable. So over the last I'm doing this over the last week because that's kind of what we like to focus on here on whatever the name of this podcast is.
Meatballs. The meatball show.
So we like to focus in on the 95 mile an hour plus batted ball because MLB arbitrarily chose that as a hard hit officially. If you have a 95 or greater exit velocity on your batted ball, as we're all aware, that is considered a quote unquote hard hit. It's different than the original hard hit metric that was on Fangraphs. It's neither here nor there. You know who
was that, by the way? I feel like I knew that at one point. Was it just,
I don't remember. I always kind of figured, honestly, I don't know.
Just dang that ball loud when he hits it, and then they write that down as hard hit.
Like, just, ooh, lordy, yeah. Like, I don't know, because we didn't have exit velocity, you know? Like, we didn't have a way to measure it. Like, someone's going, damn, all right, yeah. Yeah. Not going right. It's different than a barrel or a whatever, all the other crap they came up with.
Yeah, barrel also requires to hit it not into the dirt. It's takes into account.
A specific angle, yeah. Anyway, you know who led the Guardians in hard hit balls this past week?
Miles Straw.
Wrong. It's Ahmed Rosario with 7.
Oh, God, yeah. Actually, this isn't tied. A bad one. This is a good one. Ahmed Rosario. We like when he's not terrible.
It sounds good right now, doesn't it? actually, that is, he's tied for first with Jose Ramirez, although he did it less total pitches. 318 pitches. Actually, the most consistent one was, in fact, Tyler Freeman. That's your boy right there. 3 and 22 batter balls. Now, the real question being, this is all great news. Where does this place... Ahmed Rosario across baseball in the last week, Matt. What?
I'm going to guess not great.
No, that's fine. He's tied for 52nd.
And that's the highest on the Guardians, and that's been great.
Cool. Yeah. If you're curious, Brandon Nimmo over the last week led all of baseball in hard hit balls, 16, Nick Castellanos, Wilmer Flores, Lourdes Gurriel, and Justin Turner round out the top five. Much like my research into the fact that this is going to spoil a bit of an article I'm working on. Will Brennan leads all of baseball in foul ball rate over the last 2 years, which I think is insane.
That was an all right one. I mean, I think it's nice that Ahmed leads, but also kind of bad that he's so low compared to everybody else. But, I mean, watching this team, it's not a surprise that their most frequent hard hit contact is also bad compared to everybody else. It's a rough stretch of games. Even though that last Marlins game was a lot of fun, it felt like that was the first game maybe all season where it felt like last year where they were just being all gross and getting slap hits and Jose Ramirez got a home. And that's the thing they need the most out of that game. It was, you know, everything started after Jose Ramirez hit a home run that absolutely kicked off everything. And it just goes back to the fact that they need him and Josh Bell to be hitting home runs and Ahmed Rosario to not be grounding out in the double plays all the time. I wonder how many of those hard hits from Rosario were ground into double play balls?
That's a great question, wonder, Matt. Let's see.
It's almost like the harder he hits the ball, the worse it is because everything is into the ground.
I know.
I wonder if the strategy here is to tell him to swing less hard. Can you just get some light contact to maybe a dribble if there's only one out?
Don't bunt. That's lame. But maybe if you,
Just somewhere between a bunt and a line drive straight into the ground would be really good if you could do that for us. Now, it wasn't all bad last week. The offense was all bad, but other than that one game. But the good was, of course, Logan Allen coming up, making his MLB debut. Hopefully not the last one we see, but we saw him come up against the Marlins. 6 innings pitched, 1 earned run, 8 strikeouts, 0 walks. Those strikeouts, by the way, kind of a mixed bag of a stat that it's the most strikeouts by a Guardian starter this season.
Hell yeah.
Zach Mizell pointed that one out, and it's simultaneously great for Logan Allen and not a great sign for the Guardians. But he was super fun to watch. He was extremely aggressive on the mound. Didn't have a single 3-0 count against 27 batters. Only had one 3-1 count. So, I mean, he was up there immediately slinging the ball into the zone. That's one of the things I mentioned in the recap, I think, eventually.
Crazy pace is what I liked about it.
Yeah, too. Oh, that was another thing, too. It's not that his pitches, they're fine on their own. Like, that splitter is super good. He places it really well. But it's all, like, the little secondary things he does that creates the steps. And it's like you said, the pace is really quick. He's one of those guys where he... I don't know if Tim Lincecum is the first one that always comes to mind for most people, but for me, like a guy that turns around and coils when he releases the ball or when he goes into his windup and hides the release point until the last second, it's always Lincecum, I think, because like you look at him, he was a righty, obviously, so it was the opposite direction of Logan Allen, but when he's winding up to get ready to throw the ball, his chest is almost at second base. He's so far back. Logan Allen isn't quite that exaggerated, but just the way he does all these little things right, like hiding his release point till last second, having an extremely consistent release point, I think is another important thing, which looking at his compared to like Hunter Gaddis is a night and day difference. And considering Logan Allen does all these little things, like he's working extremely quick. He's got more torque than I think most relievers do because he's spun around so far and hides the ball. So he does all this and comes up and is so mechanically sound that I think that's a great, more than just a guy coming up and dominating a bad team who doesn't have tape on him. I think it's also that Logan Allen does a lot of things really good. And we'll see, especially in the next couple starts, when these teams start to see that he's so aggressive early on, when there's that swinging early, if he goes to that splitter more and goes to maybe another pitch, maybe like he has a big sweeping slider, he could start off with that. He wasn't necessarily all fastballs in the first pitch, but he's going to have to learn to do something other than just pound the zone, I think, immediately and as soon as other teams start catching on. But until then, I mean, if they get like 4 or 5 starts before teams even start to catch up to what he's doing early on, then that's going to be great for them and great for Logan Allen, hopefully more than this year. But at least this year, they need him to do this a lot more than just his one start.
And you mentioned too, you know, his just the way he pitches is very, trying to think of the word I'm trying to say here, but I'm so used, I guess, to lefties coming up and just being fastball slider. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'm just trying to think of some good examples. I mean, I was Sam Hench is a good relief pitching version of it, but like, I think just off the top of my head, like a good starter example of this would be Patrick Corbin. Not bad Patrick Corbin, but even good Patrick Corbin, yeah. Right? Two pitches, right? I mean, they were effective as hell, but I was taken aback in some way. Because just if you look at it, he threw 80-some-odd pitches, 46 fastballs, 23 that were splitters, though. So he wasn't even really leaning on the type of pitch that runs in on a righty. Granted, a lot of it was because of how righty-heavy the Marlins lineup is, but having that well-developed of an off-speed pitch like that is just – that's always the thing that makes lefty pitchers – that's the separator when you can turn them from a relief pitcher, as I've seen anyway, into a good to dominant starter is having a pitch that can run away or at the very least not towards a right-handed hitter. And he was excellent with it. I mean, there was a couple of really sick slow-mo – I rewatched the start this afternoon – and there were just a couple of just really awesome, like not quite phantom cam, but like just slow-mo shots of his splitter, just the way it kind of just knuckles almost. Like it's like it spins like a, I don't know, it's a kind of weird like gyro spin, but almost like it just kind of rocking in there too.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, I'd like a little more velocity considering where, as you pointed out, where he was putting the four-seamer. I mean, there's a reason why he gave it that home run. That was just a cookie and a half and a 2-0 count. But between that and being able to pair that with his cutter, he got a couple guys to swing and miss on his cutter because I think of the placement of the fastball early on, kind of reminiscent of like the way Aaron Savali kind of keeps people off base. But yeah, that splitter was something else. And then he only snapped a couple of those sliders or slurves, or do we not say slurve anymore, I guess? I don't know.
I think it's mostly changed over to sweeper. I think sweeper also replaced the slutter. It's a sweeper cutter kind of thing.
Damn, it's also both those are way more fun to say. It's a weird fake word.
I think his probably drops more than like the typical slider cutter thing did. I think it's closer to a slurve than what we call a sweeper, but I think it's super good either way. And that splitter too, like he located that so well, and not even just the movement of it is also really good, but like you look at the heat map of where he placed them all, they're all like right on the edge of the zone compared to his fastball, which is
so consistently, like you said, I mean, pounding the zone is good, but I think we brought a couple weeks ago, you know, it's not, you don't always want to pound the zone. Look what happened with Cliff Lee. He went from pounding the zone and was bad to nibbling and was one of the most dominant single seasons I think I've ever seen from a Cleveland pitcher in my entire life. But, oh, and Allen was great. I mean, we've seen you don't need, you know, 97, 98 to die to be nice. Honestly, like we have other guys coming up, hopefully that can do that. But maybe it's just because of his kind of, as you mentioned, his unique delivery that hides the ball. The fact that he is a lefty, be able to get by a little better with 92, 93. Because I think he's barely got just under 94 in the start. But very encouraging, very polished. And I think that's the part that really stood out to me, which is how polished he looked as a starter. And it's something I think we got used to for a while there as Cleveland fans. And it felt like we were kind of getting away from that because like we kind of got this – I don't want to like besmirch a lot of these guys. These kind of second run guys, though. Like, I just, honestly, most of the rotation right now is just guys who I'm like, yeah, they're fine. But compare that to the rotation of 2016 or whatever, you know. And it's like it pales in comparison. So
yeah, I think we mentioned that last week that they're kind of in the dip right now. Which for most teams, if you could get just bring up a Hunter Gaddis when he's not looking terrible and a Peyton Battenfield who was pretty solid but also kind of clearly has some flaws to work out, but it's also his first couple of starts. Like that's not a terrible. That's the low point of their prospects coming up. And it's a guy who could probably be another solid 4-5 down the road. But
well, and even like the guys, the more, you know, established starters, someone like Quantrill, I think an ideal situation, he's their fifth starter. And I think within the next 2 to 3 years, we may see that, whether that means Bieber departs or whatever. But as the young guys kind of start to come into the rotation, and I'm sorry, but that starts by Allen. Like, I just feel like that has forced everyone's hand. Like he is, until further notice, he is a rotation regular, and if he's not, then this is absolutely malpractice by the entire organization, because the window's open now. I don't care if they're ahead of schedule or whatever, but they just he is good. That looked good. That looked very effective, looked polished, it looked confident, even with having Zunino behind the plate. So
yeah, it's not like these guys are going to throw. Like Tanner Bibee is not going to be throwing 98, 99 forever. If he's doing it now, I don't care that he had like 5 walks in his last outing. Just give him a shot. And tonight, especially because Xavier Curry was supposed to go Wednesday night. Now he went tonight. So I don't know. There's really nobody else besides Connor Pilkington who threw, I think he threw recently, so he'd probably be a little bit limited. It wouldn't be a full start, but yeah, you mentioned about like Logan Allen looking just like composed out there and as opposed to like Battenfield looked more like a rookie. But part of that, I think I was like, I didn't watch a ton of Logan Allen. I watched some of his starts down in the minors, but Justin Latta, who co-hosts, again, like going back to Jeff Ellis, their great podcast, Locked On Guardians, they do a lot of prospect talk. And Justin's one of those guys where, I mean, if he talks about prospects and says he watches a guy, I will trust him to the ends of the earth that he watched him. And he's, I know he's always down there and especially like Lake County watching guys. So one thing he said afterwards, it was, he tweeted, the most impressive thing about Allen's debut is that he looked and pitched like himself. He did exactly what he's good for, or what he's good at, for a lot of guys that come up and don't look like the guys they are in the minors. He stayed true to himself and did exactly what got him here. And that's a really good, like a good sign for Allen. And I think a good observation, because as far as like looking not confident when you're in the majors, I would assume that's just like, if you come up and you're the exact same guy as you were in AAA, you don't have to adjust to your body just doing different things than you might've done when you're in the minors. Like you come up and you're completely comfortable with yourself, which is what Logan Allen looked like. So I think that's another good sign for him and how well he was able to replicate his mechanics and stay on the mound for so long.
Well, and any, you know, any pitcher could come up and do that. It's just many of them would just get absolutely shelled. And I think it's because his stuff plays too, you know, like that's the thing. He gave that a home run to, I don't know who it was. I don't know if the box were in front of me, but he gave it a home run.
Garcia.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But then he just shook it off and just struck out two, I believe. Like he just got through. It wasn't a problem. Like it was like, ah, dang. Oh, well, what are you going to do? I threw a cookie. He got himself into a bad count. It was, you know, 2-0 count. He had to lay a strike in there and, you know, Abisal Garcia loves to swing the bat, so he did, and it went very far. And what are you going to do? You know, he gave up a couple, you know, loud hits. The double he gave off to Jorge Soler, again, that's just a big, strong man who loves to swing the bat. And, you know, I the way he pounded the zone, that's going to get you into trouble against free swingers like that. But
sometimes you have to, like you said, to get back in the count. That'll be one thing to watch as we get going with his starts. If he can't always get ahead in the count, like he starts slipping sometimes on first pitches, like how does he battle back? I think that's another thing we'll have to watch in the future, because they're not all going to be as good as the start was for him.
No, not at all. No, there's going to be many bumps in the road going forward, but that's the thing. Like that's why I like his repertoire so much, is because he can throw that fastball and the cutter does have that tight movement. It kind of plays with it. And then again, he can get backdoor cutters for strikes and then just kind of work off that with his splitter and then get a fast. I don't know. I mean, I'm very encouraged by what I saw. It's been, I guess, a bit since I've actually seen a young pitcher come up. And, you know, I can't wait to see his evolution, because like there's been so much of, I hope this works out, and it just doesn't. I think the last time I was really excited to see a pitcher's evolution, it was probably, that's not terrible, probably Zach Plesac.
Yeah, no, like him and Savali, I remember coming to back to back. It was like, wow, we got these two guys, are going to be great forever.
And Plesac, I was like, I mean, ooh, look at it. I've wrote articles about how he was greater than the sum of his parts. Like, he wasn't.
But he sure looked like it for a little bit there.
You know what? He's like, well, everything he throws is kind of very complimentary. And the same thing is the case with Logan Allen, except his play is, his pitches actually play. Like, his slurve or whatever, his sweeper actually has a break, and his he throws a splitter. I mean, honestly, this is the first real good break, off-speed pitch I've seen coming out of the minors in a while. Out of a non-relief pitcher, I guess. Eli Morgan obviously came in with an absolute wiffle ball of a changeup, but
yeah, I mean, Hunter Gaddis is good. It's just, if you can,
that's true. He just doesn't have anything to pair it with. That's true. Why isn't he better? He's so big. Why would the big guys be good? Why is the little guy so good? Why can't him and Peyton Battlefield be good? And also Allen, they can carry Allen around on their shoulders. It'd be great.
And one of our questions that we had asked on Twitter from @CollinsJones, he asked, what do you think the odds are of Logan Allen securing a permanent spot at the back end of the guards rotation once McKenzie and Savali are healthy? I mean, like 199? I can't imagine. He goes, 0%.
He said back end. Hey!
Oh, got him. They'll find a place for him at this point. I mean,
if 90%? Yeah, exactly. Because like, they can't manipulate time anymore, you know, the cat's out of the bag, so to speak. And
they've got to make decisions with Quantrill, Savali, and Plesac at some point. They can't keep
sooner rather than later.
Yeah, like if Logan Allen keeps pitching like this, I think Peyton Battenfield's a little more difficult decision, because even with his good results, you can kind of see that like maybe he's just kind of on the same track that
is he good? You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's, you know, it's always gonna be lucky than good, but baseball teams don't base their crap off luck. Yeah. Sometimes, I guess, but whatever.
So unless Allen completely tanks, I think he's got a spot locked in. But also, I thought Tim Herron was Andrew Miller after one outing. So what do I know?
But, you know.
I think he's pretty much locked in there unless something terrible happens. But again, I don't think it will. So this is the part where we were going to talk about how great and locked in and fun the offense looked. But you know what? All that's gone now. It's you all don't deserve it except for Josh Bell. We're going to talk about how good Josh Bell has been.
Josh Bell, I do this constantly early in the season too. Like I go down to the MLB.com like stats page and they have the thing that just tells you how good they're doing over the last 7 and 15 games or whatever.
Oh, he's so good.
And I was like, oh, is he good now? Is he good now? Yeah, over the last 14 days, I got my baseball reference again. That's over the last 12 games, 341, 408, 659. Like, yes, ridiculous. Baby.
And a bunch more of extra base hits. What is it? 7 doubles and 2 home runs?
8 doubles, 2 home runs over the last 2 weeks. 3 doubles and a home run over the last week. You know, every now and then it's crazy to think how few hits it takes just to be good in baseball. But it was like 7 hits over the last week. Jesus Christ, that stinks.
Back. Well, I mean, look at us yesterday. We had one fun game. Like, the team is back. Gonna have a fun podcast, gonna be great, and now it's back down. Like, it's just the way the game is. It's if you're a fan and you're following it, it's just
it ebbs and flows. That's why it's good to just kind of keep a long-term view of things. But no, he's been excellent, like I said, like just comfy, confident at the plate, hitting the ball very hard. I know he's streaky and he's gonna fall back in the toilet, but for now we're swimming as opposed to sinking. I don't know, something. Yeah. Shut up.
Well, you mentioned last week, like or the week before, about needing Oscar Gonzalez over Will Brennan sometimes to have these streaky big headers. Like, this is what we need. We need a Josh Bell to be good for a couple weeks. Like, if he has this week in the postseason, it's going to be insane, and he's worth every penny at that point.
Yeah.
And one thing I looked at too, I guess this probably could have been a meatball. I should have probably just shoved it in there, but I was looking at his rolling game averages for 15 games. His highest walk rate over any 15-game span was between 11 games at the end of last year and the first 4 games of this year, 28.3%. And if you recall, everything else about him was terrible in that span. So I don't know if there's like, if he just kind of stops being aggressive and that just takes away everything about his approach, or if it's just kind of a random blip. But it seems like when his walk rate spikes super high, he kind of gets a little worse at the plate. And we even saw early on in the year, he just was not hitting the ball well or swinging well, but he sure was drawing walks. But I think he's always going to have a good eye. It's just his streakiness is a matter of getting aggressive and getting aggressive on the right balls. And when he does, he goes off like he did last week, which is a lot of fun.
I mean, I wonder if part of it, and I'm not a big, not a massive believer in like protection for hitters and things like that, but he doesn't really have much behind him a lot of times. You know what I mean? Like I don't know. The ideal lineup that we always talk about is like what, Kwan, Jimenez, Ramirez, Bell. And after that, it's like, I don't know. There's guys we want to be good and hope will become good, but are not currently good. So,
although Miles Straw right now, put him behind him. There's your best hitter. One of them, Mike Zunino. But those aren't going to be guys who are going to intimidate pitchers to pitch to Bell better. You're right. But
right. Exactly. And I just think that's kind of could be a bit of what we're seeing here. It'd be interesting that if he becomes too passive, but at times, I just think about this. At times he reminds me a little bit of like of Carlos Santana, just with the ability to actually hit the ball hard more consistently. And which is, honestly, I think that's high praise, because I think the one problem I always had with Carlos Santana was he'd work his way into a 3-2 count and then just hit a little nubber to second base or something like that. I feel like he did that 1,000 times.
Yeah, I feel like, yeah. I think Carlos purposely was more patient. I think Josh Bell just kind of happens to be and maybe slips into it a little too much at times. But it's when he's like that, he is exactly like Carlos Santana, but hitting the ball a little better.
I would love to read, get my hands on internal scouting reports of teams to see what they say about guys like Josh Bell, because
that'd be cool.
Like he is such an interesting case, and I know we talked about it when they got him and time again, but like he's so feast and famine like across his career, like year to year, and you're just like, how do people look at that? You know what I mean? Like how does a team in general, I guess, judge that? But even if he just hits basically again his career batting line with Cleveland this year, then we're all happy and we're smiling. So. But he's been great. And then, obviously, we didn't want to mention, but we will mention anyway. Ahmed Rosario has been nice the last couple of days. He got a 4-hit game. I mean, what are you going
to
do?
Almost a cycle. He was extremely close to hitting that last home run.
You said it about Bell, but like Rosario is exactly the same guy over the last, 2 weeks, 346, 414, 692. How many of those hits came in the last week or the last 7 days? Most of them. So he just... how many of those hits came in the last 2 days? 4 of the 5. So he's I don't know. I wonder if we're going to get a little en fuego era for Rosario for a couple of weeks, but and his batting average will shoot up to, I don't know, what, 315 and then drop back to 275. We'll be like, wait, I don't know what's real anymore.
Yeah, I think he's another streaky guy. And also, I'm trying to see today, did Josh Naylor get those hits off a lefty? Because on Sunday he got hits off a lefty, which is a big deal. And this is, I'm looking at the box score from yesterday. Yeah, he got a couple hits off Jesus Luzardo, who is not just a lefty, but a very good lefty.
What if he hits lefties now?
Then that's super good. That's Tito was right. He had to stick him in there to see if he's an everyday player. But
yeah, shut up, everyone. Tito was right again. Vibes forever.
You don't know more than Tito.
He's so smart. We've been doing this forever. Yeah, badly.
No. I don't know. Josh Naylor was 0-for-3 with a strikeout today. But anyway, on Sunday, when we were in the happy zone and having a happy podcast, it was going to be about the fact that Josh Naylor finally barreled up some left-handed pitching. But now he did not again because like, the Guardians have faced so much left-handed. Like Austin Gomber, who today just shut this team down. 3 strikeouts, 3 walks over 5. What the hell? He had like a 16 ERA coming into the game. He was awful. But something about just lefties, not just lefties, that soft tossing lefties. And I don't know if our own Quincy Wheeler is the one who started this or I just saw it from him, but there's like a prevailing conspiracy theory that it's pitchers who looks like dweebs just dominate the Guardians all the time. It's my favorite thing. And Austin Gomber looks like a dweeb and he dominated the Guardians. They cannot beat anybody.
I've been complaining about the middle and lefty for over a decade now. I just feel like some crappy left-handed pitcher would come and just dump on the team.
Like, always happens.
I feel like 2013, 2014 was especially bad because they had so many left-handed hitters, like young guys like Chisenhall and Kipnis and Brantley and guys like that. Like they were just so lefty heavy and it just was always so bad. I'm still sick of them. I'm sure that if, I don't know, who's a good lefty right now? Clayton Kershaw, I guess. If he showed up, he'd probably throw a perfect game, but I just...
he throws too hard. It's just going to be these soft-tossing guys who were terrible who dominate the Guardians. Like, maybe they get a couple hits on Clayton Kershaw.
Do you throw... are you left-handed? Come to Cleveland. You'll win. Don't worry.
That's what the Twins got to do. Just load up on these guys and just find the worst left-handers they can with the lowest velocity, and they would all shut down the Guardians lineup. I think the solution is... Because Tanner Bibee, I love him. He looks kind of like a dweeb. I think they have to break the curse by bringing up their own dweeb, and that will counter.
Dweeb it up, baby.
They gotta out dweeb the opponents, but
they gotta get one of those guys who are like really like a pitcher with those really nerdy, like not quite like the John Lennon glasses, but like slightly bigger. You know, perfect circular glasses though.
I mean, have you seen Tanner Bibee? He's got glasses. Yeah, I don't know if he wears them all the time because some of his pictures don't have them. But on the mound, he wears glasses sometimes. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's
the key. We'll call him the professor until further notice.
There's nobody else in the minors is the professor ever. No. Get out of here, Brian Rocchio.
I've already gotten him out of here. Don't worry.
Very quickly. I wouldn't even mention that. That was this week, wasn't it? Where he came up and kind of waved goodbye and turned and left.
Hey, buddy. See ya.
They gave him the lineup card, which just seems weird and almost cruel to me.
Because he's not on it. Yeah. Here you are on the bottom bench. There you are.
I would assume when they did that, it was kind of tongue in cheek and they laughed about it together. Cause I'm sure they said like, you'll be back and here's a lineup card with you at the very bottom. Like if they tried to play that off as like, son, here you go. Here's your lineup card. It would just be, I don't think that would sit well, but if they jokingly like, here's your lineup card, isn't this funny? Cause you're not actually on it. Take it and go home.
What's the major league minimum right now?
Probably like 500 something thousand. Maybe it went up.
Let's go 600. Cause I'm generous. 600,000 divided by 162. You made $3,700 that day. Not bad. All right.
Just to come up and hang around, eat some sunflower seeds, and go home.
Obviously, yeah. You know, more than he's made in how many months playing minor league baseball. That's great. Oh, man.
Because I think he might have been already on the 40-man roster. I think they had to select him or not. I'm not sure. But either way, when he's up, he made some easy money there and went back down and went back to AAA. I don't think that's a terrible way to do it necessarily. Like, just to bring up a guy and let him look around and. You got to feel real good going back to AAA and knowing like that's what's ahead of you.
One day this will all be yours. Exactly. Now? No, not now. Get out of here.
Absolutely not now.
Get on that bus. You need to go and pick up Tanner Bibee. Why are you guys having a bus all the time? Shut up. Also, you're driving the bus.
We can't afford another bus driver. We're already paying you $3,700. Go up there.
Yeah, come on. Hey, Mr. Moneybags. Come on. Why don't you call Uber? What the hell? Yeah.
So I figured one more thing we can do this week before questions is just kind of take a peek around the great division that the Guardians find themselves in. Some would say it's the baseball's best. I don't know who would say that, but they'd be wrong because it's awful.
Well, they're the best at being centrally located.
Not even that necessarily. Well,
yeah, you're right.
Actually, they're pretty central. That's not bad. Maybe they're one of the most. They're the best geographically accurate division, I think.
Yeah, well, let's see. Yeah, because the
we need to do a compliment sandwich on Merritt. Start with something nice about the division first. I think they're very well where their name says they should be. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so we have to do the poop part. They're terrible at baseball.
Right? No, we each have to do a compliment.
Okay. I think that 3 of the 5 teams have neat jerseys.
There we go. Which 2 are the bad ones?
The Guardians and the Twins.
Wow. That doesn't count. That's not a compliment. That was wrong.
I'm sorry. Red, white, and blue is boring.
Well, okay, it is true. Yeah.
Down with
color
America.
Schemes. 3. Just clip that real quick. Send to at FBI.
Oh, God. It's looking bad for my wife. Oh, no.
3 of the 5 have better color schemes. Okay, but I love the Guardians uniform.
Yes.
And I don't mind
the I don't mind their jerseys. I think the White Sox home, they have several cool ones. I just like their red and white ones.
Yeah.
The Royals, outside of the powder blue ones, I think they have some pretty sick unis.
Yeah.
And the Tigers, I'm sorry, man. They have 2 different Ds. It's,
the Tigers
it's hilarious.
Are good. They're one of my favorite, just everything about their aesthetic. Now, anyway. That's enough niceness. this division is hot garbage.
It's so bad.
Nobody wants to win it, just like last year. The Guardians kind of took it at the end. So I mentioned earlier that the A's have a negative 103 run differential. Even that, the AL West combined does not have a worse run differential than the AL Central. The Central combined is negative 118. Nothing else is even close. The only team with the positive one is the Twins. This is entering today. I guess the Guardians include today because the game is official, but so it's probably a couple more because the Guardians just added 6 more negative to their run differential, but just an all around terrible division. They have 4 that are negative. The only other division with that many is actually the NL West. The Dodgers are the only positive one there. So
the Royals had to benefit from an absolute collapse of the Angels bullpen to stop what was a division-wide 16-game losing streak going into April 22nd. Just, it's really a lot of bad baseball, man. I don't know if it's just everything's going wrong, but it seems like everything is going wrong. None of the teams have any pitching, it seems like. And even when they do, the bats just kind of take the day off. Now, granted, the Tigers, White Sox, and Royals just stink. Like, the Royals don't know what they're doing. The White Sox hate themselves, and the Tigers stink. I don't have any good words for that.
They just stink, that's it.
They're just bad. Of course, they beat the Guardians 2 times.
The third time almost did it, if it wasn't for one Jose Ramirez home run.
They have 3 people on their team with an OPS plus over 100. In fact, they have 3 people on their team with an OPS over 85. OPS plus over 85. It's just, they're really bad. They're all bad. Like, I don't know. It's just, you keep on going down the list here, and it's just like, why? What happened here? But there, I guess there's a reason why they keep on making fun of this division when you talk about any other team. But you know what? They can kiss off.
The Royals have the worst combined WRC plus in the league at 66, which is abysmal. The Rays, for comparison, are 153. They're the best. So they're almost
as a team
3 times. What? As a team, yeah, it's ridiculous how good they are. 48 home runs the Rays have. The Royals have 17. The Twins are the only ones that have at least looked sort of like a real baseball team at times. I mean, the one with a positive run differential, they're, I guess, the same over the last 10 now, but they've had at least some times where I think it's always from the beginning, it was always going to be Guardians and Twins at the top. The White Sox, they're just too volatile, I think, to even like put up, to even say like they're going to be up to the end. It's just maybe they will, maybe they won't, but who the hell knows with that team anymore? I think the Twins are always in goal.
My God, they're bullpen guy. I thought Reynaldo Lopez was going to be a good closer, but he's just been hideous. Like,
yeah, well, they were going to have Liam Hendricks as a closer, right? But he had cancer, so he's out. But other than that, I mean, just like, an awful division. Do you want to guess which batter in the AL Central among qualified batters who has the highest WRC plus?
Is it Jake Berger?
That'd be Mike Zunino at 147, Cleveland Guardians starting catcher. Again, that's coming into today. It's probably worse because they lost. And
sure, what's Jake Berger's then?
Is he probably doesn't have enough to be qualified?
Maybe he doesn't have enough to qualify because I'm just on Baseball Reference. He has a 163 RBAT plus and a 175 OPS plus. But, you know, like you said, maybe he doesn't qualify. They got a lot of hideous mustaches in this division, too. Jesus Christ. Just clicking through some of these teams. Like,
Jake Rogers, I think he still has his for the Tigers. His is really good.
Yeah, Jake Rogers, Dylan Cease is still just looking grubby. Mike Clevenger looks dreadful. The guy I just mentioned, Jake Berger, looks just, oh, gosh.
Yeah, Berger only has 46 plate appearances. 60 was the qualifying cutoff.
Well, that's not my fault.
He'll be up there when he clicks, as long as he's been ridiculously good for the White Sox. Like, yeah.
A lot of home runs. That's really what it is. You can't, yeah.
I don't have any overall thoughts about the AL Central besides they're bad, and it's kind of turning out to be like last year. Nobody really wants to win the division, it doesn't look like, and you need one big winning streak at the end. I think what's going to come down to, which is, again, kind of fun compared to like years where it was the Guardians winning 100 games, the series against the Twins are really going to matter to see which team is going to win 86 games and wins the division. It might be fewer wins, but it's fun to be on an even playing field, and I feel like right now and potentially for the rest of the season, they could be pretty even with the Twins.
I think my favorite moment of last year was the Twins game when the Guardians hit a walk-off home run and their announcer just went, "And we've seen enough of the Cleveland Guardians. I was like, yeah, get out of here, you bitch. I hate you. I was also very tired of the Twins, but yeah. I'm a little sad because now with the balanced schedule, we're not going to see them like 170 times. And so, like, I don't know. I liked that for whatever reason. Maybe, I don't know. Now I just have to watch all the teams. Like, you know how much I care about, I don't know, watching the Marlins or the Rockies or the Mariners or the Cubs. Actually, I hate the Cubs. The Padres. There's just so many teams. All of the AL West, I'm like, I don't care. I guess, whatever.
That's always been my feeling on the balance thing since the beginning. It's all of this, in the end, is just made-up bullshit. If we can, like, force some rivalries and you have to see these guys more and you start to hate them, I think that's more fun than playing the fucking Pirates. I don't care what they're doing. Yeah, and it's not special. If you're playing everybody, it's not special to see the Pirates anymore because you're going to see them every single year. Like, there's nothing special about playing the Nationals now. It's kind of a unique thing before. And
right.
I don't like the balance schedule. And it's also not, you can quote unquote balance the schedule, but if like a team playing the Guardians now is not the same as a team playing the Guardians when they're actually good. It's like, I don't think the balance schedule matters that much.
I don't really see the goal in it, honestly. Again, the divisional thing is fun. It just creates, I don't know, geographical rivalries, and then sometimes you get some crossover. Like you said, playing the Pirates every now and again, playing the Reds every year was just fun. Like, I don't know, what's the point of even having two separate leagues at this point? It's all one big baseball now. So
yeah, I hate that. Like, there's been genuine suggestions of that, and I absolutely hate it. Like, do you not realize this is all just fake, made up crap? And if we stop pretending like it's real, it's gonna be a lot worse. Like, we're all just playing into this, pretending like this matters. And if you just kind of get rid of that and just have one big league where everybody plays the same amount of numbers, the same teams every time, and nothing is unique, like, you're gonna drain every bit of fun out of.
No, dude, it'll be great and fun and dynamic and interesting and cool, like the NFL. It'll make everyone feel good all the time, like the NFL does. It'll be definitely a cool thing, and not probably the worst professional sporting league in the entire country.
It'll be cool and fun and great.
Yeah.
Love it. What do you say we answer a question to wrap up? I had two this
Let's
week,
but
we only answered one because I think it fit really well. Logan Allen, he's pretty obviously going to win a spot. But this one's fun, too. Again, our own Quincy Wheeler, at Quincy One.
Hi, Quincy. Quincy Wheeler One.
Hi, Quincy, on Twitter.
I said it first.
No, I said it more. I said it with more heart, and I meant it more.
Yeah, well, I said it louder.
If you could choose one of these six players for the Guardians to acquire in July, who would you choose and why? His options are Hunter Renfroe, Garrett Cooper, Tyler O'Neill, Tyler Ward, Wilmer Flores, and CJ Krohn. Most of these guys are like one-year rentals or maybe have 1 year on them. I don't know if I'm too Guardians front office pilled now, but the idea of trading any amount of anything for a rental just scares me now. I get the Guardians have done it in the past, but unless you get a guy for virtually nothing, getting a guy for half a season is a scarily low, what's the word I'm looking for? High probability of working out, I think. Because even like Josh Donaldson, who was virtually nothing. It was Julian Merriweather who turned out to be nothing. I think he got suspended for steroids and he wasn't very good, but like he was super good in the regular season and tanked in the playoffs, and that was it. Like if Julian Merriweather turned out to be anything, you got it. You traded him for essentially nothing. I think
counterpoint, like, Jay Bruce.
Yeah, Jay Bruce was good.
Rule.
But I just want more trades. I would be more in favor of trading more prospects if it means getting Andrew Miller than trading fewer prospects to get a Jay Bruce. I think is basically where.
I mean, I made this exact statement last week. Look at the roster anywhere in the farm system. Trade all of them for I don't care what.
Just give a team a pen, tell them to circle a section of the roster, and they get that.
Listen, you just give them a couple of menus, you know, a couple of prefix menus. these are your three choices. Pick which one you want, and we get that guy. And the guy, of course, is, I don't care, whatever, Shohei Ohtani. Just to pick a name out of that.
Now, with that said, Hunter Renfro has been super good for the Angels. And I liked him, I think he was on the Padres at one point, and I liked him there.
Yes, I won a World Series in MLB 15 to show with the Padres, and he hit like seven home runs in the way in the playoffs. It was great.
It's the only metric we need. It's not good. I think he's been super underrated for his whole career, and he's extremely good this year. Like, if that continues to the playoffs or through the trade deadline, if you can, because I think everybody kind of thinks like that now. You don't get as much for Reynolds as you used to. I don't think you would even get as much as the Guardians dealt for Andrew Miller. I don't think you have to trade quite as much because everybody is so risk averse to getting these half season guys or even a season and a half guys. So I think if they can get there and just get him for a couple prospects, I virtually don't care who it would be for. I would take Hunter Renfro and, like, at that point make him, I don't know. I mean, the problem is, again, the logjam of mediocrity. You can't give up on these guys for a half season of somebody. But if, like, at that point, Will Brennan and Oscar Gonzalez don't look like they're going to carry you to the playoffs, then maybe just plug Renfro in there. If, like, Josh Naylor keeps struggling, then have Josh Bell at first and put Renfro at DH or something. But I don't know. It's one of those things where if he's hitting really well, I think he'd be my preference just because he's been really good and I've liked him for a long time, and just to get him in for half a season.
But yeah, I don't know. I'm with you. Trade more guys for that can provide talent and just kind of see what that does. I don't know. I'm sure we can't see it now because it's early in the year, but I'm trying to think of what teams might be willing to sell. And that just with the way that the whole situation is set up these days, I think we've seen a lot of that kind of reconsolidating of high level talent in the contenders. I mean, you look at the real bottom of the barrel teams; they don't really have very much on the team anymore. You know what I mean? Like the Royals have Vinny Pasquale-Antonio, whatever the hell his name is, but like
Pasquale-Antonio.
Yeah, I just gotta keep on saying his name. I guess the Giants might have a guy knocking around. But, you know, I don't know if you're going to get a Taro Estrada. I can't pronounce his name. I apologize, Mr. Estrada. J.D. Davis they traded for, I know. I don't know what they're doing, but, you know, whatever. I'm sure they'd be willing to trade a bunch of guys for something. But Jock Peterson, who knows? I don't know. Sorry, Quincy, but I don't want a rental.
Do you just want to dump all of our prospects for
anything?
Yeah.
I'm never going to see him, so whatever.
I mean, you don't want to trade Tanner Bimy, but considering Daniel Espino is shut down again with a shoulder injury, if he was involved in the Sean Murphy trade at any point and they didn't pull the trigger, that's somebody's going to go to the grave with that knowledge because they're not going to tell anybody that they were that close.
So here's my issue with Tanner Bimy is I don't like the way his name is said. So
trade him right now. Get him out of here.
Boy, I'd be a great GM in the 1970s.
1970s, yeah, spot on. Alan, this guy does not have a home run hitting name. Get him out. I don't like this
He's
guy.
A pitcher, sir.
In that case, keep him in.
I think I should trade for, who's this guy? Scott Alexander. He has the most mighty mustache I've ever seen. I should trade for him. He's in the Giants. Look him up, listeners. He looks great.
On that note, Merritt, I think that'll do it for us this week. If you haven't already, follow us on Cover the Corner. Cover the Corner on Twitter. Find us at coverthecorner.com. Cover the Corner on Facebook. Leave a review for the podcast if you like it. Let us know what you think of the show. Follow me on Twitter. I'm at Matt R-O-Y. Merritt is at Merrill Lynch, like Merrill Lynch with lunch. And Merritt, talk to you next week.
I'll be there.